Welcome to 3GT, the podcast for three guys, a pastor, a professor, and a parishioner discuss theology from a practical standpoint, all from a Reformed perspective. Find out more at 3GT.xyz.
Welcome back to another episode of Three Guys Theologizing. We want to thank you for tuning in today. If you have been a longtime listener, a special thanks to you for continuing to endure with us. But maybe you are a new listener and we are glad to have you join us as we sit down to discuss various topics from a theological and a Reformed perspective. My name is Kyle Borg and I am joined by my co-host Barry York, who hails from Beaver, Pennsylvania, where he is president of the Reformed Presbyterian Theological Seminary. Good afternoon, Barry. How are you doing?
I'm well, Kyle. Good afternoon to you as well, my friend.
Well, good. And we are joined as well by a third co-host, our friend, Scott Hunt. Barry, will you ask Scott how he's doing this afternoon for me?
Scott, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you, Barry. And tell Kyle I extend my greetings to him as well.
Kyle, he's doing well, and he says hello.
Thank you. Thank you, Barry. I appreciate that. We won't make you play the middleman through the whole thing, but it is
trying to be a peacemaker. Just trying to be a peacemaker.
Trying to be a peacemaker. Because untold blessing to those who will make peace. Good work. So it is good to join both of you around our metaphorical table. And today we are going to have a lively, hopefully an interesting discussion. I will admit, I don't know where either of you stand on the topic that we are about to discuss. I have wondered, as I've thought about this and prepared for it, if there will be a couple of generational differences among us. But maybe to get us started, we are going to show just how hip and relevant we are here at 3GT, dominating the mass media news headlines this week. Have been reports about, well, Barry, I think he actually, what, he's your senator, John Fetterman, is that correct?
Oh, yeah, he's my senator.
Okay, so Barry's senator, John Fetterman, notorious here in the United States, as many of you have probably seen in recent headlines, Chuck Schumer, who is the head of the Senate, well, he's not the president of the Senate, the vice president would be, but anyway, Chuck Schumer announced earlier this week that he was not going to be enforcing any of the dress codes for congressional members. All of their aides and others who participate in whatever it is that the United States Senate does, they are still required to hold to the dress codes, but the senators themselves are not. And of course, splashed across the headlines are pictures of John Fetterman, Barry's senator from the great state of Pennsylvania, who likes to show up to the upper chamber wearing hoodies and sports shorts. Now, in case our listeners did not know, it is my understanding that until very recently, the floor of the Senate had fairly strict dress codes. The men had to be in ties and coats, and women as well have had to adhere to certain rules of decorum, which themselves, from my understanding, have been loosened in the last few years. But still, by and large, senators were expected to be in what culture might define as business clothes. But that rule is no longer being enforced. In fact, yesterday, at the time of this recording, John Fetterman presided over the Senate wearing shorts and a t-shirt, I believe, which is one of the first times in the history of the United States Senate where that has happened.
If it really was John Fetterman, there is some debate about whether it's even him or not.
It's true, but we are going to devote the first part of this entire episode to the conspiracy theory as to whether or not it is, in fact, John Fetterman. Scott, do you have anything to say to that?
Well, you know, some of us know how puppet mastery works, and I imagine it's the same. I don't know if it's the real John Fetterman or the fake John Fetterman. All I know is there's a puppet master somewhere directing him what to do and where to go and probably what to wear, because they don't have good taste.
There we go. Well, that was a short-lived discussion about whether or not it was Fetterman, but the point is the Senate has seemed to ditch their dress code, as Fetterman and others are now choosing to wear casual clothes. While our interest here on 3GT is not with the upper chamber, it is not with the politics of the United States government. But this topic did get me to start thinking about something you might call dress codes in church. So let's talk today. Let's have a lively generational discussion about the clothes that we wear to church. So I want to open this up to really have a hearty discussion on it. I think let's just start here. Barry, we'll start with you since you're a boomer. And I thought it would be useful as a boomer. What are your thoughts on church clothes?
Well, I guess it was instilled in me, even in the non-Christian home that I grew up in, that when you went to church, it was a time to go before God and you would wear your best. So I can still remember going to the First Baptist Church of Waynesville, North Carolina on Easter Sunday and having a little coat and tie on and my Easter eggs melting in my pocket of my nice new Easter suit. But it wasn't just Easter that I dressed up. My mom always made me try to look nice when you went to church. And so I guess part of it is just, you know, your family traditions and things. That's always stood with me. And I think what's sort of the compelling idea behind it is we're going to go before God. And I know that it's not our outer wear ultimately that matters most, because we need to be making sure we're dressed in his robes of righteousness. But the thought that was always impressed upon me as a child, and I still think a lot this way, is that you dress for the occasion to which you're going. And so when I go to work, I put on certain clothes. When I work out in the yard, I put on certain clothes. When I go on vacation or to the beach, I put on certain clothes. And when you go to the church, when you go to church and you're worshiping God, I've always just thought you should go wearing your best rather than your worst, because you're appearing before God. And, you know, you've probably heard the old analogy, if you were going to go see the president and visit the White House, you probably would get more dressed up for the occasion. And so that's been my practice. Now, I think that even that principle means different things for different people, because we all come from different walks of society. And so I'm not sitting there at church thinking everybody should be, hopefully not. Well, my saving grace is my wife. She doesn't put my clothes on, but she basically dresses me. She tells me what to wear. So I don't even think about it. I just put on what my wife lays out on our bed and I go to church. And yet I'm not sitting there thinking everyone should be dressed like me if I'm wearing a coat and a tie. I just think that wherever we are in our stations of life, we should bring clothes that represent us giving our best to the Lord rather than our worst. That's where I'd start.
You know, I want to get Scott's opinion on this. Scott, I'm going to do that in a minute. I forget which, are you technically in Gen X? Yes. You're a Gen X, aren't you?
Okay. Solidly in Gen X, yes.
Yeah, that'll be good. So we got a boomer, a Gen X, and of course, your wonderful and favorite millennial over here, born in 1983. Barry, just one quick follow-up until we start hitting you with a barrage of questions. I will admit, you just used the term Easter, and I wasn't sure what Easter was until I looked it up in the King James Version of the Bible, Acts chapter 12, verse 4, where we actually read of Easter in the King James Bible. Other translations call it Passover. So I assume Easter corresponds something to that, and Barry remembers fondly his Easter service. So I appreciate that, Barry. Scott, as a Gen Xer, what do you think? What do you think about what Barry has said? What is your practice? Give it to us.
All right. A couple of things. I want to preface my statement by saying Gen Xers are a very unique generation. We are angry and bitter. We do not like boomers. We're not fond of millennials. We are counterculture. And so on the one hand, you would get a lot of Gen Xers who would be like, we don't need all this suit and tie garbage. On the other hand, we don't like millennials. So we're going to be like, we don't want to support you either. So we're kind of stuck in the middle. I jest a little bit. We are kind of a unique generation, though. Secondly, Barry, you mentioned if you go see the president, you know, you want to dress up and wear a suit and a tie. But now if I would go to the upper chamber, I would wear a hoodie and sport shorts.
Yes.
I think that's right. If that is allowed,
that is certainly what I would be wearing.
So I, you know, in a lot of ways, I agree with Barry. I was raised in the same manner of you dress up to go to church. You know, because you're going to worship God. And I still hold to that very dearly. You know, I go to court. I'm in court once or twice a week. And, you know, if it's a regular court day, I will go in a shirt and a tie, a suit and a tie, only to show due respect and regard, not only for the judge, but for the position, for the authority of the court, and to show respect. That's not to say I haven't gone like special occasions where I, hey, Scott, can you come and cover something, go in blue jeans and a collared shirt. I've done that. But I've apologized for doing that just because I don't want to disrespect the judge or the court. And, you know, the judge was very gracious about it. Like, ah, don't worry about it. It's not a big deal. And I say that to say that when we go to church, I agree with Barry, it's not the outer things that make us holy before the Lord. On the other hand, our outward appearance demonstrates a lot of what's in our heart. And a lot of times, the outside reflects, what I'm trying to say is the outside reflects what's on the inside. And if we are not considering at least how we should appear before the Lord because of our love and our honor for him, then we're not coming from the right place. On the other hand, if somebody comes to church in jeans and a t-shirt, I'm, you know, by all means, you don't kick them out or say you need to wear something different. I mean, that's something that, as long as they're moderately or modestly dressed, I don't think that there should be a dress code per se. But I do think it speaks a lot to what's in the heart of a man or a woman.
Well, I thank you guys, as a boomer and a Gen Xer, sharing that to this little young buck millennial. Before I continue with this discussion, just so you guys know, I always, just so you guys know, my practice is I have worn a suit coat in Lord's Day worship a single time in my 10 years here in Winchester. I tend to be a very warm temperatured person, and I wore it my very first time I preached in Winchester as the pastor, and I was so profusely sweating. My elder said, how about you ditch the coat and never wear that again? And I was all too excited to ditch the coat. I do wear a tie, and in the summer
sweater.
Months, I might even...
And a sweater sometimes.
I do. In the winter, I wear a sweater.
I screenshotted that, sent it to Scott one time, I remember.
Yes. I do not wear a cardigan. I do not wear, I'm not old enough to wear a cardigan yet, but I do wear a sweater. But I do wear a necktie only because I think, I don't even want to say it's an expectation, because I think on a regular basis, there might only be one other individual in our congregation that wears a necktie to church. But I certainly feel it's an unspoken expectation, and I just haven't really pushed the boundaries in taking the necktie off.
Sort of a
but
Kansas,
here's where I want to go with you.
Sort of a Kansas it is, clerical collar.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I you know, I would wear the clerical collar. I think they look dignified. Speak about letting the appearance say what's in the heart. I'm a very dignified person, and wearing a collar would express that. Here's where I want to go with this discussion. Both of you have, I think, to quote Scott, but I think it's similar to what Barry said. Scott, you said that our outward appearance reflects what's in the heart. I think that the three of us would agree that, biblically speaking, that is certainly true with modest dress. It's certainly true with modest dress. But help me draw out from the Bible where you might conclude that the clothes that we wear reflect a reverence for God when we approach him in worship. How would you biblically begin dissecting that?
Well, first I would say it does. I mean, there are instructions in Timothy and Peter regarding modesty in worship. So I do think that that is an important thing that, and the modesty addressed there isn't often what we're talking about. Often we're talking about not having enough clothes on, and so that particularly with women, that their body is, parts of their body are being seen by the congregation. And yet in the New Testament, it's more of a warning against excess, where people were dressing to be seen. And so modesty can cut both ways. And one sense, you can wear too few clothes. On the other hand, you can wear too much or too clothes that are too much drawing attention to yourself. Or, you know, talked about the braiding of hair and just this idea that there were certain hairstyles and jewelry and things that were being worn in order to attract attention. And I think that's really a key principle underneath all of this, is that I want to wear clothing that does show respect for the Lord, however you understand that, but also respect for my fellow brothers and sisters in Christ. So if I come in wearing something, I could be in a coat and tie and totally distract the whole congregation. If my coat's a Mickey Mouse coat and my tie, you know, lights and flashes, I mean, I could distract the whole church with something that quotes a coat and tie. So you do have to think about, I think the whole idea of modesty is really important, but understood in a fuller way than we typically talk about it in our modern culture. Because usually in our modern culture, it's just talking about, you know, not having cleavage showing or dresses too short or whatever. And often it's only thought of with respect to women. And I think it has to be thought of by both sexes in the congregation.
Yeah. And, you know, I would go to a place that's probably different and doesn't even really address clothing as it were. But in Romans 12, Paul exhorts the Romans to be to not be conformed to this world, but to be transformed by the renewing of the mind. So I don't think, and I agree with Barry here, that we can be a distraction in worship if we are trying to, you know, be flashy. I would, you know, if I showed up to worship in a tuxedo, I mean, that's just ridiculous. I'm not going to do it.
Why, Scott, if the outward appearance reflects what's in the heart, you're just a classy person. I mean, why not go all the way and wear a tuxedo?
Well, I could if I owned one. Nonetheless, the point is, what would be the motivation for me to wear that? Am I trying to stand out? Am I trying to look better than everybody else? I mean, that does reflect, you know, the heart issue as well. There are people, and I've seen it, who visit church, who their life certainly does not reflect, their behavior doesn't reflect salvation being wrought in their life, but who try to put on this air of holiness by the clothes that they wear. And it does, you can see it. You can identify that they're trying to put on airs. So I think where I would go to is, why ask somebody, you know, if this issue came up, what is the motivation? What spiritually, what are you thinking dressing the way that you are, and why do you do it? And I have no problem with guys. There are men in our church who come to church in jeans and a flannel shirt, and I'm perfectly happy with that. That doesn't bother me at all. And then there's others who come to church in a suit, tie. I wear a suit and a tie just because that's what I wear. I know, Kyle, just stop. I'm cold all the time. I have worn a cardigan as well to church, to worship. I'm old enough to do that. The point is, when you see the motivation of the heart and the changes that are made in people's lives, and you address, you know, why do you wear what you wear? There's usually a good reason for that. And, you know, some guys, blue collar workers, they don't have suits and they don't need suits. Why would we expect somebody to dress in a certain way to worship the Lord? On the other hand, you know, their heart would be, I want to make sure I'm not a distraction. I want to make sure that, you know, I can worship the Lord and with a good conscience. So those are the things I think that I would use to address the way a person dresses in church or attends church. What clothes they wear is, are you being influenced by the world, or are you trying to be transformed in the renewal of your mind by the Word of God and His Spirit, and looking modest and looking respectable, looking honorable? That's where I would go, Kyle. You may not agree with me, and you're probably still lost on the why I wear a suit and tie to church. But
I'm actually still lost on Barry's imagery of wearing a Mickey Mouse jacket. I mean, that just threw me off. So, I mean, I have some opinions on this, but I'll restrain them for the time being. So, Scott, you have said that if somebody shows up in flannel shirts and jeans or something comfortable, comfortable being the key word, like you would not approach them. Like you would have no problem. Barry, what about you? Like, no. Do you think people who are dressed down in church, does that need to be addressed? Does that need to be talked about with them?
Well, I would be very hesitant to go do that. I'm in a church that's at the edge of a college campus. And I would say, you know, there's a lot of, let's just say there's a wide range of different dress there. And I have not addressed that situation, even though there might be certain people, I think, hey, we are in church. It seems like you should have a little bit higher standard or regard in what you're wearing into the house of God. Cause I just can't help but think that way. But I also don't really necessarily view my job to go up and be a, you know, I talk about being Sabbath day police officers where we're trying to correct everybody. You have to think of a lot of different things with this issue. You have to think about, is this person a believer? They're just visiting. Is this person a new Christian? Has this person ever been even thought about this subject? I've talked in my pastoral ministry in a smaller congregation where I was involved in shepherding people. I've had some discussions with people about what they wore and on an occasion or two told them that I thought maybe, you know, wearing something a little nicer or wearing something a little less revealing would be appropriate to do. But I tried,
and that's why I wear a suit.
I tried to speak in a spirit of love. The other thing that I think Scott's touching on that we don't think enough about is the command not to be conformed to the world. I think a lot of our people, and particularly you young millennials and the whatever generation comes after you, I think a lot of them are influenced more by the world and what the world's wearing than they are by previous generations and careful thought about the subject from the Word of God. And so I think that we need to be careful not to just let the culture come in and influence us fully. When God sent his people into the land of Canaan, you know, he addressed their behaviors and again, I'm not saying we return to Levitical law. I'm not saying that at all. But there are principles that you find there of how to deal with certain situations that you're going to encounter as you engage the world. And to be honest, I really, you know, like what's happened at the Senate level and, you know, what we might see in churches, people not being dressed appropriately. I really think it all started with the whole tattoo movement. That's what I really think.
Well, of course it did, Barry, because when you have tattoos, all you want to do is show them off. Yeah. And so you can't do that if you're wearing a suit and tie all of the time. So you can go listen to a previous episode on our discussion regarding tattoos. So I'll be a little opinionated here. You guys have not convinced me. And let me throw out a couple thoughts and see how you guys might respond. I am not sold on the idea or the argument that our outward dress necessarily reflects the reverence with which we hold a situation. I want to be very clear that I think the Bible does speak very clearly about issues of modesty, and I think about usefulness. And by usefulness, I mean I don't think that superfluous clothing is that which Christians should be panting after. John Calvin in his commentary on 1 Peter kind of reduces it to those two, that the rule for clothing is that which is modest and that which is useful. I'm not convinced that there's a continuing obligation that my outward dress expresses the reverence with which I hold a particular situation. For my part, and maybe you guys can correct me, I cannot imagine the apostles telling people as you come together to gather in the upper room or we get ready for the Jerusalem council or whatever, that we need to shine up our sandals and we need to put our most presentable clothes on. I just don't see that. You know, there is the Levitical priests were required to wear certain dress, but that was That had major ceremonial implications. I don't see that as a moral imperative. But here's what I do think, and it's interesting because both of you have talked about not being conformed to the patterns of this world. I would actually think that in some ways, I think the Bible allows Christians, when appropriate, to appropriate cultural expressions. So I would look at, for instance, Scott speaks about going into a courtroom. And that, you know, though there's not, Scott, what I gathered from what you said is it's not a law of the Medes and the Persians that you wear a suit and a tie. You might accidentally show up in a polo shirt and jeans and apologize. Are you kicked out of the courtroom if you don't show up? Yeah. So,
well, quick story. There was an attorney who was found in contempt of court for refusing to wear socks in Indiana.
Well, that's Indiana.
Look it up. Look it up.
Indiana. Indiana's got its own problems. So I do think that there are times in which it's appropriate for Christians to appropriate cultural expressions. The Westminster Confession of Faith speaks in terms of circumstances of worship, circumstances being those things that are common to human actions and societies. And I think one of the interesting points about what we wear to church, we do have a changing society. And I think in the older generation, our society did express a particular respect for one's surroundings reflected in the clothes that they wore. So this isn't meant in a pejorative sense, but I get why older generations still kind of hold to that. Well, you know, when I was younger, people had that. But I think the Senate's new rule is reflecting that mindset is diminishing. You know, I don't quote me on this, but wasn't Barack Obama one of the first presidents to really stop wearing a necktie in official engagements and start going with the open collar? And that became culturally acceptable as business dress. The necktie began to fall to the wayside. And I say the sooner the better. I hate neckties, but that's me. So I think there are cultural things that can be appropriated. But I think for me, and you guys can push back here in a moment, I think people should dress in a way where they don't stand out in church one way or the other. I'm in a rural working class congregation. Men do not wear suits in my church. I would stick out like a sore thumb if I wore a full suit to our congregation. I'd be the only person doing that in the church. And maybe we want to differentiate between what a pastor should wear and what everybody else should wear. But I do think that the atmosphere set just by a cultural context can be helpful here. Do you guys have a problem with that? Like, would you push back on that?
No, in one way, and perhaps yes in another. So I think, like, I've been in different countries, and if you go to the Philippines or you go to other places in the world, there are going to be different styles of clothing. In some places, men wear robes. And so for them to come to church reflecting the culture like you're speaking of, I think, you know, I totally agree with that and what you're saying about Calvin. I'm just saying that, you know, I think it's worth examining as we, if we're seeing a, like, we look at the Senate, you know, is your clothes are reflecting cultural values. So is it okay if a person wears a dress to church and it's a man? Well, obviously not. But why? I mean, we could say it's modest. You know, so I think you have to be careful not to say I think just as a culture can be reflected in clothing, I think a desire to love God and people can be reflected in the clothing that we wear. Again, depending on the situation, I totally agree with you that we shouldn't be, that we do have to find, you know, as we work with people to be careful not to just stick out all the time or, I do think that is important. That's part, again, what I'm speaking of with respect to modesty, but I think within that, there can also be a range of, just because, let's say no one else in the church wears a tie, that doesn't mean if someone comes wearing a tie that that's wrong. I just think we have to be careful not to judge one another, try to understand motivations, and realize we could actually be reflecting with our dress some of the values of our culture if we're not careful.
Yeah. And Kyle, I wanted to address something that you said. I think you are conflating what I said wrong. So I said, be transformed by the renewing of your mind, which will be
actually
reflected.
The Apostle Paul said that, Scott.
Well, I said it too. I quoted him, giving him full rights, of course. The idea that you took from that, correct me if I'm wrong, but you took that to mean that I was saying, or I was advocating for, if you are a Christian and if you're transformed by the renewing of your mind and the spirit, that you will dress in a certain way. And that's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying if, you know, when I say the inner or the outer man reflects the inner man, you have to take the context of that man into account as well. So, you know, if you have blue collar workers at your church, and you know, if somebody came to church wearing a Budweiser shirt every Sunday, and then they were like, you know what, that's probably not one. It's just not good.
Well, right? One is Bud Light.
Yeah. Well, I wasn't going to go to the Bud Light issue, but my point is, you know, maybe that's not portraying the best message to those around. I mean, what am I standing for? I'm saying when you start to have the outward man reflect the inward man, it relates to thinking and being thoughtful in what they're doing, not just putting on the first thing that they pull out of their drawers. What can I do to not stand out, to be modest, to not try and cast a stumbling block before any of my brothers in how I dress? And I think you addressed that. You know, you could cast a stumbling block to your congregation if you go to church dressed in a suit and tie. On the other hand, if you go in shorts and a hoodie and try to preach a sermon, that's gonna cause another kind of stumbling block.
Bummer.
Sorry, Kyle.
Bummer. I would do it if I could.
I'm not advocating for a certain type of dress, but what I'm saying is that as we consider our life before the Lord and his people, we need to take into account, is what I am doing beneficial? Not, you know, all things are permissible, but not everything is beneficial. And that's what I'm getting at. We need to be thinking those things. Yes, Barry.
Scott took over hosting duties. So Barry, go ahead. Scott gave you permission.
I don't have to do the introduction or the conclusion, I'm good.
Yeah. I was just wanting to piggyback on what Scott's saying. I wasn't trying to say that, you know, if I go to church, I'm showing more reverence if I'm dressed to the hilt in a coat and tie. So the better my clothes, the more reverence I'm showing. That's not the correspondence I was trying to make. I was trying to say that the reverence comes in making sure that what I'm wearing is appropriate to the situation, is appropriate to the people around me. And I do think sometimes what happens to millennials, especially millennials, is they don't have enough respect for the older generations that might be able to give them some, you know, wisdom and counsel. So
to be fair, Kyle, the Gen X has that same issue. All right. So
look, millennials and Gen Xers are overshadowed by Gen Z. Okay.
Absolutely.
So we're in good grounds here. So that's, you know, I think there are, in some ways, we're sitting here having a hearty discussion, and I do think there are probably some differences of opinions. I do think it's an important question at the end of the day, because whether we want to acknowledge it or not, there are certain associations that people have with church. And you know, it's interesting, right? When you go to church websites, how many of them actually under like frequently asked questions will say, what should I wear? And they're very quick, you know, just come as you are. You know, it's one thing to sit here and have this discussion, but it is a significant issue for some people because they have certain associations. And I think wherever we fall down, you know, we do need to have our consciences informed. I think there's ways to appropriate certain cultural expressions. I think also of 1 Corinthians 13, love is not rude. The word that Paul uses there for rude really, it connotes love knows how to act appropriate to the circumstances in which it finds itself. And there's something to think about there. You know, what does it mean to love God and love my neighbor in the circumstance and the context of public worship? Mm-hmm. I still think the necktie is the bane of human existence, and the quicker it disappears, again, the happier I will be. But I do think there are worthwhile, I think you guys have touched on, a lot of it is the drive of the heart. You know, if you're wearing clothes to stand out in one direction or the other, well, that's inappropriate because public worship is not the place where you come and grandstand yourself. But I think too, and I've heard this from both of you, right? There is charity to be extended to people. Mm-hmm. That at the end of the day, you know, James 2 does not tell us when the rich man comes in with his fancy clothes and the poor man with his poor, well, you poor man, you better go get the rings and you better get the nice robes. And then we're going to allow you a seat at the table. You do take people where they are. Even as you will gently challenge and encourage them. So I think it's an interesting discussion. I think there's a lot more that could be said, but we're kind of winding down here. But it is an important discussion as well, practically speaking, because it does continue to be an issue for many people in the church. You guys have any final thoughts before we close this episode out?
Well, I do think it's important for leaders to talk about these things because they're going to be modeling with their own lives and with their own families, somewhat the expectations of a congregation. And so I think on occasion, you know, especially in the past, I remember having some discussions about this. And there is this tendency, if, you know, you give an inch, people take a mile, and you just have to realize sometimes if everybody's dressing down, it'll just start going more down. I mean, I've seen that in situations before as well.
They start getting tattoos, and the next thing you have is John Fetterman in the Senate wearing his hoodie and sports shorts.
That was the correspondence I was going for.
But your point is well taken.
And, you know, I think one thing that that perhaps the younger generation should consider, as you referenced James 2, it's possible for this pendulum to swing the opposite direction, right? So to not look down on those who do dress up, who do try to look nice, who may come in, you know, if I wouldn't know any better, I'd go to church wearing what I would wear in Marion if I were in Kansas, and, you know, not to be looked down on because I'm wearing a necktie, the bane of, you know, human fashion or whatever you call that, Kyle. But so there has to be charity both ways. And I will tell you this too, I would much rather wear a suit than jeans, because suits are so comfortable. They are so comfortable. And if you go out and get a nice, well-fitted suit, they're like pajamas.
Scott, I'm a pastor. Where am I going to get a nice, well-fitted suit?
I know. Well, I mean, you can get them on sale, but
it's true. It's true. Well, I appreciate this discussion. I want to assure you that I will be wearing a necktie to church on Sunday. I will be grumbling as I tie it around my neck, but that's the nature of it. I do find the necktie to be the most superfluous and useless article of clothing that was ever invented for humanity. But
you know where it came from, right?
Well, it used to tie the collar together before we had this little invention called buttons.
Well, no, it was, I think what I've heard, it was originally like a napkin that hung around your neck, and that's why it was brightly colored and everything. And then at formal meals, to keep the food from getting on your nice clothes. And it just eventually evolved into what we have today as the necktie.
Well, I heard it came with the rise of the gallows, and it was actually the knot that was tied around people's necks before they went and got hung. So at least that's what it feels like. So I do think at the end of the day, if we really want to reflect our eschatological glory, we should all be wearing white robes to church, because that's what we will be wearing for all eternity. But I do thank you guys for this hearty discussion. I hope our listeners have endured through this, and we thank you for tuning in to another episode of Three Guys Theologizing. Be sure to head to our website, 3gt.xyz. Subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts. That way you'll get notified every time a new episode drops, and you will never miss a great episode of the best podcast around. Thanks for listening.